Good day, I'm Al Cresta. Join me and my guests as we try to develop conversations of consequence. It's talk radio where God matters, looking at all life through the lens of the Scripture and the teaching of Christ Church.
Cresta in the afternoon, weekdays from 4 to 6 on 990 WDEO.
Radio for Catholic and other Christians. This is 990 WDEO, Ypsilanti, Detroit, or on the internet at WDEO.net.
My guest is Meg McDonald. Meg is the executive director of the Chias Girl Institute. And as executive director, she oversees the development and growth of two of the organization's programs, Women Speak for Themselves and a program nicely titled, I Believe in Love. In 2011, she was the recipient of the Robert Novak Fellowship, an old and late friend of mine, for a project titled Marriage and Young Adults, Understanding the American Struggle to Get to I Do. Great title. And Meg's writing has appeared in the Washington Post, the National Review, Verily, our Sunday Visitor, and many other publications. Meg, welcome to Church and Culture.
Great. Thanks so much for having me, Deal.
Now, Meg, you're a native of where?
I'm a native of Kansas City, Kansas.
And you are a Midwesterner, and tell us, you graduated from where?
I graduated from the University of St. Thomas in St. Paul, Minnesota. I did my undergraduate was in a degree called Catholic Studies and then a second major, Psychology. And then I did my master's there as well in teaching.
Now, your boss at the Chias Girl Institute is Helen Alvare, right?
She is. That's correct.
And Helen, of course, is a great pro-life fighter, leader, activist, and, of course, intellectual leader as well of several generations of young women, including yourself. That would be the case, I imagine.
Yes, absolutely. My mom did a lot of pro-life work in Kansas growing up, so I grew up actually knowing about Helen and her work. So it was actually kind of a dream to land a job with her when I got older. So.
Well, I'm sure she's a great boss because she's a great lady. I'm talking with Meg McDonald, who is the executive director of the Chias Girl Institute. And what got my attention about Meg is this wonderful program that she's running entitled I Believe in Love. Now, before I ask you to explain it, Meg, I Believe in Love is a website, and it is exactly that. It's www.ibelieveinlove.com. And if you go on that website, you see quite a few stories from the point of view of parents, of single men and women, of married couples, of there's one section for men. I'm not sure how to interpret that. But quite a few stories, almost kind of confessions, or I should say celebrations, of people who do believe in love and practice it and want other people to hear their stories, not so much to be heard, but to encourage each other. Is that fair to say, Meg?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, when did this start?
I Believe in Love went live. The website itself went live in 2013. And really, there's two pieces to it, and I don't know how fast we want to get into that now, but there's a website.
Go, go, go.
Okay, great. There's a website, and then there's a outreach component. And basically, some background to help people understand it. We started the organization Chias Girl Institute is focused on reconnecting sex, marriage, and children through law, through communication efforts, and through grassroots efforts. And what we started with I Believe in Love specifically was we thought, how could we be of service to a demographic that's most struggling to connect sex, marriage, and children? And we identified that demographic as the working class demographic, so those who have a high school degree but don't have a four-year college degree. And they still make up the majority of America, of the American population. And they're the ones whose non-marital pregnancy rate and their less and later marriage is, you know, at higher rates than the college-educated, those who go to four-year degree. And for some comparison, among women in their 20s who have a four-year degree, 12% of births, first births, will be outside of marriage. among women in their 20s who don't have a four-year degree but have a high school degree, 58% of first births will be
unplanned. That's a huge difference.
Huge difference, exactly. A lot of commentators call it the two Americas. Charles Murray has written a book about it called Coming Apart, the dividing of the classes. And what Charles Murray and a lot of others are saying, really both on both sides of the political and cultural aisle, are that that divide is coming across in our family formation. So college-educated are still getting married, albeit much later than they used to be. But those who have a high school degree but not a four-year college degree are not getting married, but they're not putting off childbearing. And I think we all probably know very clearly the effects of that for young adults, but also for the children. A child born into a single-parent home is more likely to be abused, more likely to suffer emotionally, and more likely themselves to grow up in poverty, and then end in poverty as an adult. So
I'm talking with Meg McDonald, I want to remind our listeners that you are the executive director of the Chiascuro Institute. And by the way, I want to read the mission. The mission of the Institute, you unite scholars and communication specialists dedicated to relinking the goods, or I should say reconnecting perhaps, the goods of sex, marriage, and children, and especially but not exclusively among the disadvantaged. And it sounds to me like, you know, one focus you have is encouraging women to pursue their education. Would that be correct?
I think that's part of it. But I think really, though, our bigger focus is encouraging women and men to be more intentional in relationship formation, and specifically to push back as a whole against this cultural narrative that uncommitted sex is not going to be harmful to the future of young men and young women and their children.
How do you push back against a narrative, Mac? Could you translate that for everybody?
Yeah, absolutely.
What does it mean to push back against a narrative?
So the goal of I Believe in Love, right, the goal is to push back on a narrative by creating this viral web presence. So,
wait a minute. You just went from one complicated phrase to another one. So
right.
What you mean by pushback on the narrative, isn't it just reject the party line, reject the cultural norm, reject the standard, reject what everybody else is doing?
Right. Exactly.
And so, and then you're offering what in its place?
So what we want to offer is what you articulated, which is positive stories, hopeful stories about dating, about marriage, about parenting, but all which lead to an end of the fact that sex, marriage, and children are best together. So, and we're doing that with the people who are closest to the problems. So our writers are actually writers that are young adults themselves that have grown up in this culture that has told them that uncommitted sex is okay. And many of them actually, the outreach part of it is what we're starting. Many of them are in working class communities that want something different than what the working class community is offering them, but don't have that positive peer pressure. They don't have a family structure even. Many of them grew up in single parent homes. They grew up not only knowing one parent or moving around a lot. And we're inviting them to talk about a different way of life, a life that puts sex, marriage, and children together.
Now, what do you mean by unconnected sex?
Uncommitted sex.
Uncommitted. What do you mean by uncommitted?
Sex that's outside of marriage, or in some cases even outside of a relationship. So sex that is not, you know, you're not committed for life to a person, but rather it's just something you do with another person.
So in other words, you're against recreational or casual sex.
Mm-hmm.
Hooking up is the phrase, I guess.
Sure.
That is used in the culture, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely.
Now, wouldn't you agree with me that that's a pretty steep hill to climb right now?
It is a steep hill to climb. However, I would say that many young adults want something different for their lives and for their relationships.
How do you know that, though?
Because they're saying it themselves.
Where are you hearing it?
Through many places. I mean, if you look at you look, for, at least in our demographic, we have young adults that are writing, you know, we have a single mom who has two kids that she had outside of marriage that said to me when she met me, I never knew anyone that didn't have sex until marriage. And then she said, and I wish I hadn't have had sex so early in my teenage years, because although she loves her kids greatly, she understands that there's huge hurdles now to overcome for her and for them.
And, but do you, beyond, Meg, beyond anecdotal evidence, and by the way, I think anecdotal's very important because it's person to person.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any polling that shows that young adults, teenagers, are hitting the wall, they're really getting tired of this kind of anything-goes attitude toward sexuality and relationships?
I don't know if I'm familiar with polling specifically on that type of question. I can say that young adults continually poll 80% want to get married and be married for life.
Really? Now, that's a pretty good poll.
Mm-hmm. It's a great poll. And obviously, not having a lot of sexual partners before marriage leads to a happy marriage. There's plenty of scientific evidence that states that. Young adults have a fear of marriage because of the divorce culture. They want to make sure that they're doing things the right way. And so part of what we're hoping to do is through stories, through friendship, through modeling, help them see that a way to marriage, which they say they want, and then to a happy, sustaining marriage, is to have fewer sexual partners outside of marriage.
So are there studies to indicate that there's a relationship between the number of sexual partners and the divorce rate, for example?
There's studies, I'm familiar with studies that talk about the number of sexual partners and happiness levels in marriage and communication
yes.
in marriage.
And they are inversely related?
Yeah, correct. So those who have more sexual partners tend to be less happy and have poor communication skills inside marriage than those who have fewer sexual partners or no sexual partner except for their spouse.
Now, you said that I Believe in Love has a outreach program, and you distinguished that from the website to some extent. Does that mean what form does that take, Meg?
So we are piloting a program in Ohio, and we're about to launch into Omaha, Atchison, Kansas, and Front Royal, Virginia, actually.
And it sounds like you're going through some Catholic colleges.
To a degree. So, we're working with the Pregnancy Center in Front Royal, Virginia. We're working with Benedictine University in Atchison. And then we're working with the Archdiocese of Omaha, their Family Life Office in Omaha. And so what we're doing there is we are training young men and women, some who are married, some who are single and dating, to be editors, but also to be mentors and to accompany young adults in this working class demographic through this period of transition from high school to, you know, the workplace, whatever that might be, on matters of dating, relationship, you know, finding employment, that type of stuff. And we're doing that by inviting these young adults to take a part of this website. So by inviting them to come and share their stories at their website as a way to be leaders in their community against cheap, uncommitted sex, and to put a positive face on marriage and family from a demographic that really, in a lot of ways, lacks hope for happy relationships and for marriage and family, but really would like hope. They want to believe it's possible.
But, I've lived now here in Washington now, not 20 years, I'm 65 years old, and I've watched a lot of young women come through Washington, young Catholic women, evangelical women. And I've, you know, their struggle with the environment you described is very, very sad to watch. And in some cases, some of the women who have, you know, moved on into their mid-40s and so forth without getting married believe that their modesty, if you want to call it that, is somewhat to blame for them still being single.
Mm-hmm.
Have you heard that story much?
Sure. So Timothy Reichart has an article in First Things magazine called Bitter Pill, in which he addresses that exact idea, which is essentially the idea that sex is the cost of being in a relationship these days. And so for those women that you're talking about, Catholics and evangelicals, who decide not to participate in that arena, you know, if a man can get sex somewhere else, he's you know, if that's the cost of being in a relationship and they're not offering that, then he will go another way. So certainly that is part of the...
And that's why you're targeting men as well.
Exactly.
And is that why on the navigation bar on your website you have a specific tab for men?
That's part of it. There, you know, the other part would be that I think women more naturally want to share stories about relationship and dating and so forth, and men are more probably interested in sports or other more active things. And so we have to have kind of a place that maybe, you know, the website, we've gotten feedback that the website as a whole sometimes feels more female-centric. And so that section we hope to fill out with content that would appeal specifically more to men.
Well, I read through your website, and I read some very, very powerful stories written by men there. And, you know, it didn't feel female-dominated to me, but then I wasn't keeping score. I was just reading the stories, and wonderfully personal and testimonies to, you know, what can happen when people put their trust in each other in an exclusive way. And, you know, I have to really congratulate you and Helen Alvarez on what you've done here. And how would people listening to this program who would like to you know, see the website, we can repeat that URL, but how can they, you know, send you story suggestions or send you their own stories?
Sure, absolutely. So there's on the website, if you scroll down past the top of the homepage, there is a place for submissions. But we have an email. It's editor@ibelieveinlove.com. And anyone can reach out to us with stories or ideas for stories even, or just general feedback about the site.
Now, are you getting a lot of what we in publishing call just over the transom submissions?
We, you know, we've been around for about a year and a half, and I would say that over the the submissions have increased, certainly as we've gotten more well known.
Right, visibility.
Exactly. So we do get a fair amount that are coming just from
each. Over the transom is the phrase.
Yes.
Do you know what a transom is?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. A lot of doors don't have them anymore.
Yes.
So you're getting more and more of these, and you're making more and more friends and more relationships for the program.
Right. So in Ohio, we have a young couple, David and Amber Lapp, who live in a working-class neighborhood, and they've invited their neighbors, who are working-class young adults, to be regular contributors at our site. And through that, because their neighbors then share their stories on Facebook or on Twitter or, you know, just to their friends, they've gotten a lot of people in the town who know about the website and will come to David and Amber and say, oh, I want to write for you guys. Can I share my story? So there's also an in-person component of people hearing about it in these small little communities and wanting to take part of it.
You must have, in the year and a half that you've been running this program, you must have come in contact with some pretty desperate people who really were hungry for this kind of affirmation, to people saying, you know, we're here to support you and we're here to be of supportive to you in any way we can.
Yes, I think the most consistent feedback we've gotten is how hopeful our site is to people and how they come to our site not really knowing what to expect, but they leave feeling like they can have better relationships. And that's, you know, precisely what we aim for, and that's a hard thing to do sometimes, but we're grateful that's the message we've sent to people, is that it's possible to have a happy and healthy relationship.
Now, is there any way in which your website is going to become a place where people, like-minded men and women, can meet each other?
I don't know if we've gone to that point. certainly, you know, people comment in the comments and become kind of friends that way. You know, we really, as I said, we're trying to move to these other towns. We're really trying to have in-person small group type experiences for working class young adults. You know, college students have great groups like Fellowship of Catholic University Students or Campus Crusade for Christ, and that's a place where they can meet like-minded people to be friends with and even to date and oftentimes get married. Working class young adults who don't go to college often don't get those experiences. So that's what we're hoping to do. That's what we're doing right now in Ohio, and that's what we're hoping to do in Omaha, Atchison, and Front Royal, and then hopefully many more towns, is create, you know, in-person small group experiences, whether they be, you know, meetings or whether they be hosting a concert in town or doing a service project together, something that can bring like-minded young adults together in their communities for friendship.
I'm talking to Meg McDonald, who is the executive director of the Chia Skuro Institute, and she, under the leadership of Helen Alvarez, created a program called I Believe in Love, and also another program entitled Women Speak for Themselves. Now, is that a similar type of approach you're taking in that program?
That one's a little bit different. Women Speak for Themselves started as a movement against the HHS mandate, and it remains focused on the HHS mandate, but it also broadly pushes against this idea that abortion and contraception are the sum of women's freedom. That letter ended up being a lot of doctors, lawyers, teachers, homeschooling mothers, business leaders, and so that program has taken the realm of those women often have already been very involved in their communities, and we're providing them with training, we're providing them with resources, we're providing them with action items to raise noise about those issues at the local level primarily. So, you know, when something with the HHS mandate comes down, we're encouraging women to contact their local news stations and speak with their local news stations about covering it and covering it from a pro-life, pro-religious liberty mindset.
And is there a website for that as well?
There is. It's womenspeakforthemselves.com.
And what actually can women do about the abortion mandate under Obamacare? I mean, what kind of activism are you encouraging there?
So it varies from, you know, kind of moment to moment, as we know with these sorts of things. You know, at one point there was hope in Congress that certain things would be passed, and so then action items were things like calling your congressional representative or having a meeting with him and sharing why you would like certain protections. Now, you know, it's primarily up to the courts, and so the biggest activism that can be done is getting letters to the editor, op-eds, or getting on local news, providing a women's voice that's against the HHS mandate and in support of these religious institutions. You know, so far the media narrative really tried to say that it was women against the Catholic Church or women against religious leaders. But that just wasn't true, because we have more than 43,000 Catholic evangelical women who have signed on. Women.
Really? You've got that many involved. That's wonderful.
Mm-hmm. Who have signed on. And so we just want to make sure that those voices are represented in the media.
There is an amazing, I mean, I think in a way the number of people, women you have involved in that program is going to be far surpassed eventually by the number of men and women that you involve in your I Believe in Love program. Because from my vantage point, you're offering something there very unique, very positive, and it's almost like you're pouring water on the desert. And at some point, it will begin to pull up, and it will begin to you know, become a lake and a river, and I don't mean to get overly metaphorical here, but it's going to be really nutritive. It's going to really give people something they haven't had.
Right, right. I think that's a great way to describe it. We are big fans of a book called Join the Club, which talks, and I can't remember the author at the moment, but it talks about this idea of positive peer pressure, and that when you build social movements like this associated with, you know, other friends being a part of it, it only it has that ripple effect of more and more people want to be a part of that club and then want to follow that path that that club is, you know, determining. And so that's what we're really trying to do, is create actual clubs of people that are saying we want better relationships and we're committed to helping each other find those relationships.
And you're a young woman, you're, what, 4 or 5 years out of college. You're fighting all these battles yourself. True?
Mm-hmm.
So you're, this is something that you're a part of yourself personally.
Right. So certainly as a young person, I can certainly understand and identify and relate to a lot of the things we're dealing with. I think the distinction is, as a college woman, I was given a lot of benefits. I had a ton of like-minded peers. I had benefits of a campus ministry program at my university and just more direction and general support. I had, you know, immense benefit of parents who have been married for 35 years and a stable family life. And
what about brothers and sisters?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yep. I have 3 siblings. And, you know, for a lot of these young adults, they never saw their parents married. Some of them never knew some of their parents, or they witnessed, you know, a string of divorces. They suffered, you know, a lot of trauma. They had maybe siblings. Maybe they had a lot of step-siblings or half-siblings, but they grew up in very broken homes. And then they didn't have the benefit of that I had of like-minded peers, people that were saying, you know, we're going to figure this culture out together. So I certainly can identify with a lot of the themes, but I would say that I had a lot of advantages that we're hoping to provide, you know, some of those advantages to these working-class young adults.
Well, let me just say this to our listeners. We're approaching our break, middle point of our interview, that you're listening to Meg McDonald, and she is one of the young leaders and destined to become well-known. I'm not trying to make her, you know, big head or anything, but I'm so personally excited and gratified to have her on the show because she's a voice of the future, and she is committed to making change in our culture, and she's, as my dad used to say, put her money where her mouth is. So we're going to talk more about her program and more about what Meg McDonald's going to be doing in the future just after this message.
Today's programming on 990 WDEO is made possible in part by our day sponsor, to honor Father Bill Tindall, pastor of St. Michael the Archangel Church in Livonia, who celebrated his birthday this week from the parishioners of his parish. Father Bill is a great spiritual leader and is loved by everyone he serves and who have grown to know him. Happy birthday, Father Bill. If you have a message you want to share, be a day sponsor at 877-288-1077.
Republicans, Democrats, no matter which political party is in office, there are always investment opportunities to be found. The Ave Maria Mutual Funds won't compromise the moral beliefs of its investors. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. The portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and moral values. Call toll-free 866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com.
Schwartz Investment Counsel, Inc., a registered investment advisor established in 1980, serves as an investment advisor. All mutual funds are subject to market risk, including possible loss of principal. To obtain performance through the most recent month-end and a prospectus, which includes objectives, risks, fees, expenses, and other information that you should read and consider carefully before investing, the number is 1-866-AVE-MARIA or at AveMariaFunds.com. Distributed by Ultimus Fund Distributors, LLC.
Ever thought you'd make a bundle by trading in or selling your used vehicle only to find out it's worth a dinner for two? Well, it's much more valuable to donate your vehicle to Ave Maria Radio. Thousands of Americans donate their vehicle each year. The donation to Ave Maria is easy, tax-deductible, and supports our efforts to evangelize. A year from now, will you remember that dinner or your gracious and selfless donation? Go to AveMariaRadio.net to find out more. That's AveMariaRadio.net.
Meg McDonald, delightful young woman who is the executive director of the Chiaroscuro Institute, which is devoted to reuniting good things in life, the moral goods of sex, marriage, and children, and especially reaching out to those who are less advantaged than those of us who went from high school to college, because we had the support of our family and we had just a smoother road. And I think it's really to the credit of the Chiaroscuro Foundation that they're recognizing that and working to help people who, you know, haven't had the help that some of us have had. Meg, I was listening to a video of you, and you made the statement, our generation is changing things, but we need your help. Now, I just have to ask you, how is your generation changing things?
I think, I mean, there's many ways that our generation is changing things, I would say. But I think that what I meant with that is the number of young adults that, as I said earlier, want marriage and want marriage to last. And the reason that right now there's less in later marriage is largely in part to their fear of marriage because of their watching their parents' generation divorce. I don't think there's a single young adult who hasn't in some way, there's a single one of any of us who hasn't in some way been influenced by the divorce culture, either in our immediate family or extended family or just someone in our community, someone that we went to school with or someone that lived in our neighborhood.
Well, Meg, I can tell you from experience that a divorce sends a very serious ripple through the entire community, a tissue of people that are connected.
Absolutely.
And you're right, it does. And it, you know, it can divide people forever, and it can also create sort of seismic shifts in other marriages at the same time.
Right.
And, of course, you know, the children. I mean, don't you, there seems to me to have been generation after generation of social scientists who have tried to downplay the impact of divorce on children.
Uh-huh.
You know, and this situation where the child goes back and forth between two houses.
Right, right, absolutely. I think there's no question. And I think that, you know, talking to young adults and seeing young adults, their polling and their writing, what they don't want to do that to their children. They don't want to send their children between houses. But so as a result, they're fearful of marriage. And so
yeah.
They want to change that by rewriting the narrative or rewriting the
yeah.
story and finding out, and what we're trying to do, I believe in love, what is the best way to date so that I can get to a marriage.
Do they date anymore? I mean, I've got an 18-year-old living, a son,
mm-hmm.
in junior high school. I've got a 26-year-old who's still single.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get the impression people date the way I dated back in the 60s.
Well, there's no question that that's true. And that's true, I think, at all, you know, demographic levels.
What happened to dating?
What happened to dating? I think there's two things. Actually, Anthony Eslon from Providence College.
Yeah, I know. Tony's been on this show and a good friend of ours.
Yeah, he's fabulous. But he explains it well, I think, in his most recent book. But he talks about how the, you know, the hookup culture created this, you know, kind of this culture, this mindset where it's unclear if I ask you to a movie, what would that mean? Would it, you know, for those of us who are Catholic and have certain norms that we're trying to uphold on the lines of sex and dating, a date might seem very pressure-filled. It might seem...
Are you serious?
It can. I mean...
It really becomes that complicated for your generation?
Because
you can't just go out to a movie and have a cup of coffee and a pizza slice and just enjoy getting to know somebody?
Sure. To some degree, I've been in places, you know, I went to college and then I've lived in a couple cities before I landed in Washington, D.C., and it positive peer pressure does make a difference. If the culture that you're in, the group of friends you're in are casual daters, you're going to be a casual dater. You're going to be more comfortable going out to a movie or getting a cup of coffee and not overanalyzing it. But if the culture you're in is, you know, takes dating very seriously because they take marriage very seriously, you know, they've overcorrected kind of what a date might mean.
Right. You know, when I was a teenager, my problem was getting up the courage to call anybody.
Right.
I mean, the first time I called a girl for a date, I had it all written out on a piece of paper. And, you know, I was, like, trembling as I dialed the that was a rotary phone, by the way, Meg.
Right.
And I was trembling. And I knew the young lady in question knew exactly that I was Etner. I knew she knew.
Right.
And but she made it easy on me by saying yes.
That's good.
And it took me a long time to get over being nervous about asking
right.
somebody out.
Right. Well, there's now, vulnerability.
Isn't that the way it ought to be?
Yeah. I mean, there's a vulnerability in opening yourself up to another person. That certainly is the case. You know, what we're seeing in the working class and what we're trying to work with is, you know, for them, sex on a first date is pretty normal. And to not have sex on a first date, we actually have an article on our website about this, but to not have sex on a first date.
Saw that. You remember the title of that one? I saw that on your website.
I'm trying to remember the title.
You have so many good things. In fact, one thing I'm going to do is get that in front of me again so we can talk about some of those great enticing. Here's one, how a haircut helped us grow in love.
Right.
I love that title. And then you have, I'll just go down the ones here in the sex category. If your goal is not to have sex, do this. What I learned about my boyfriend when he walked into a porn shop. Wow. Uh-huh. Confessions of a woman who almost settled.
Uh-huh.
50 Shades of Grey just doesn't do it for us. That's great. What I now know, I'm not damaged goods. I mean, these are all very well titled because they raise issues that people think about all the time. You're really not in any way dodging the tough questions, are you?
No, we aim to not. Our tagline is real people, real stories, real love. And we aim to be raw and to be vulnerable and relatable. And that's been another reason why our site has, I think, become so accessible to people, because they're not getting a sugar-coated story and a sugar-coated response. They're getting something that they can read and say, "Oh, that's so true."
It's not the Disney version of Love and Marriage, right?
Exactly. Yet happily ever after is still possible, even though it's not the Disney version.
Absolutely. What do you think is missing from the typical narrative, as you put it, of the happy ever after? What is it that you're adding there that is important?
Oh, there's so much, but I would say one of the biggest things is that that relationships and marriage specifically take work, and that there's seasons in a relationship and in a marriage, and that it's not always going to be blissful. It's not always going to be butterflies and stolen kisses under the moon, but there is a deep residing happiness or joy, as we would call it, that comes in a committed relationship when you get married and you commit to one person for life.
The common theme I see in your titles are, you know, you have people there who have gone through the worst parts of this whole story. I mean, they've done it all, or they've suffered from it all, and yet somehow they got it back together and they're telling the story of how that happened.
Right. And I would say this, not even everyone on our site has it all back together. You know, our single...
Well, who has it all back together? I mean,
And that's it.
Life's a journey, right?
We want to be a place where that journey can be talked about publicly.
Right.
Where, you know, no matter where you're... We'll meet you where you are, so to speak. And that's the beauty of accompaniment, is that we can meet people where they're at and then bring them a little bit further. And we've seen that. We have amazing stories of people who started writing for us and have, you know, come leaps and bounds from where they were a year ago before they started writing for us. So there's a, you know, there's a real benefit for the author, too, in participating as a writer.
The pitfalls of dating when you are hungry. Is that as funny as it sounds like?
That author talks about comparing, you know, when you're hungry and you just want to grab, like, the junk food around you or whatever.
Yeah, oh, I see. Metaphor.
Exactly.
And you have one here entitled Real Men Do Dishes. I have to I'm probably guilty of not doing enough of that myself. Because that can become a serious issue in a marriage. I mean, not just the dishes, the garbage, the grass.
Right.
Whatever.
We had someone actually, we had a young woman comment on that, and she was like, oh, this is a joke. My husband doesn't do any dishes. And I commented back from our website and said, well, but this is a man encouraging men to do that. And so then she went and read the article, and she's like, oh, I see. Well, I hope it does that. And I'm going to
So, I mean, are you the editor? I mean, when people submit their ideas, do they come to you directly?
No, they do come to me directly. I'm the editor-in-chief, but I have a terrific managing editor who, she's part-time, but she works like she's full-time, and she's just got an incredible eye for the stories. Her name is Monica Gabriel, and she's just got an incredible eye for stories and bringing the important parts and the really great catching parts to light, and then also directing an author who maybe has a part of an idea but doesn't know which way to take it. She's really good at the pitch process and helping.
I found myself reading several articles by someone named Brittany.
Mm-hmm.
And I found them to be very, very good.
Brittany is a fantastic writer. And what's amazing about Brittany, we met Brittany when we first started the website. I went into Ohio to the working class neighborhood she lives in and met with her. And she, when she first was turning in articles, they were, you know, less than a paragraph, and she really was unclear about the writing process. And we developed a worksheet to guide her through writing, and she has developed into an incredible, poignant writer who turns in 500-word, 600-word blog posts that need just a little editing.
She's thoughtful, very thoughtful.
Very thoughtful. She's very thoughtful.
I like the one where she writes a note to her younger self.
Mm-hmm.
I'd almost be afraid to do that.
Right.
You know, I don't know what I'd say.
Right.
You stupid
right.
idiot.
Right. Right.
You're not old enough yet to appreciate the humor of that. So what are you looking for in a man, Meg? What do you, I mean, you must have thought about this. You're right in the middle of, talking to all these people about relationships.
Getting a little personal here.
No, come on. I mean, generally speaking, what's...
Generally speaking, I think that most women are looking for men, and I would include myself in that, who's dependable, who's authentic, who really wants to share the journey, and who, you know, is eager to be, you know, a partner and a protector and share the ups and downs of marriage and parenting and just general life.
I like that you began with dependable. That, to me, just rings a bell.
It's important.
And do you find much dependability out there among the men you meet?
I think that, in general, my demographic, I think millennials in general struggle to a degree with dependability. We grew up in an instantaneous culture where everything came pretty quick, with iPhones and fast food and, you know, everything's fast. And so, dependability is something that I think my generation as a whole struggles with. But again, it can be learned. And as
you don't think dependability can turn into boring?
No. I don't. I mean, I think that, you know, every person's different, but I think that that what makes a marriage work is someone that you can count on both sides. I don't think it's just men that need to be dependable. Women need to be dependable, too. So,
you know, talking about being personal, I'll share a personal experience of mine. It was in the... This all happened in the late 70s and 80s. There was the feminist movement, but what men found themselves hearing is that men needed to express and show their feminine side more. And we heard this from people like Phil Donahue on his show and from a lot of movies, usually starring Alan Alda for some reason, or Meryl Streep or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it was my experience that I didn't have any trouble showing my feminine side because I was kind of goofball anyway, but I found that women didn't really trust men who showed and expressed their feminine side because it seemed weak. Mm-hmm. And so men were put in a kind of catch-22 where they were, you know, the culture, so to speak, was demanding that they be more, you know, how shall I say, less rigid or less controlling and so forth. But yet women were reading that in a way that they distanced themselves from them.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any kind of dynamic going on where the expectations put on men and women culturally actually end up alienating them?
I think there's no question that a story like that has trickled, you know, decades later, that narrative. But there's no question gender mistrust is very, very high. The idea that men and women don't trust each other. Women think men aren't dependable and won't support them. And men think women are too needy. And that's all generally speaking. I don't think that that's an absolute, but I think that the result of that is a lot of distrust between men and women, which is a huge thing we're trying to break through and help men and women understand each other and how, you know, this is how a man works and this is how he thinks and this is how a woman works and this is how she thinks.
Well, didn't the entire feminist movement teach women to not trust men?
Mm-hmm.
It seemed to me that was
movement.
One of the first principles, right?
Right, and the bottom line was you don't need a man, that you can do it yourself.
Did any of that ever appeal to you as you were growing up and going through college?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I grew up in a stable home, in a Catholic home. I grew up desiring marriage and wanting a family life, and I grew up with brothers who I find to be very interesting and fun and funny and adventurous.
Do you have three brothers by any chance?
No, just two.
Just two, okay.
Yeah.
But I think growing up with brothers, are they near your age?
They are. Mm-hmm. I'm in between the two of them.
That's just such an advantage in understanding men, don't you think?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
I mean, that automatically makes you more comfortable with men.
Mm-hmm.
Am I exaggerating that?
No, I absolutely think so. And I think also I can turn to them for advice on how to understand men.
Oh, would you beat up this guy for me?
No.
Are they really protective of you?
They would protect me, yes.
Oh, I bet. And I bet your father would be, too.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Doesn't that make you feel more secure as you go about, you know, navigate through this world of dating and relationships, that you have these male protectors in your family?
Absolutely, and it also gives me a model of what I should be looking for in a man. And that's something that's a huge part of the I Believe in Love project, is giving these young adults who didn't have those advantages models. So, you know, Brittany grew up in a divorced family, and she's talked about before how the absence of her father has impacted the way she relates to men. And she sees that how that could transfer over to her children. So, you know, Tyler and Jasmine are another couple writers at our website. They're engaged, and they have a daughter. And Tyler, you know, talks about his fear of repeating the serious mistakes that his dad made with them. And how, you know, how does he make sure that he's going to be a father who doesn't hurt his children, but who does everything he can to protect and to provide for them. But without models, that's a hard road to walk when you don't have an example to lean on. So that's a huge part of our outreach program too, is giving these young adults people that are physically in front of them, friends who, you know, are married, who can show them examples of what a happy, secure family looks like.
Now, if you were to, let's say you had a filter on your television that you could filter out every show that modeled the kind of relationships and sexuality that you're trying to counter,
mm-hmm.
how much television would be left to watch?
Oh, gosh, not much. Very little.
I mean, is there anything out there that nourishes you from the point of view of television or maybe films?
To be honest, I don't watch a lot of television. And that's
probably the reason, right? One of the reasons.
Maybe. More so, I'm a social person. So by the end of the day, I'm ready to go be with friends. And by the time I get home, then I'm ready to go to bed. So I think that that's more of, you know, it just, I don't make the time. I don't prioritize television. But certainly, you know, a lot of America does. And certainly what they're, you know, consuming is not conducive to understanding these healthy models of marriage.
What about in the music you listen to?
Music as well. I mean, there's a lot of commentary out there about how bad rock and rap are, especially as it relates to talking about objectifying women and you know, just, you know, I don't need a man, distrust between men and women, those sorts of things. So music is a huge area where, you know, we might like the beat, but we are, you know, we're consuming lyrics that are not helping our mindsets.
Well, Meg, I've noticed that you write for Verily, and mm-hmm. I've been following that magazine since its inception, which is devoted to the same values and role models that you're working to promulgate through I Believe in Love. And I've also noticed another phenomenon in what you would call the young adult book market, where you have sections of, say, Barnes & Noble that are specifically young adult or teenage fiction.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go into those sections, you'll find that the way love and marriage and dating are depicted are very traditional. Have you noticed that?
I can't say that I've noticed it that closely. I've heard of different books or different trilogies or series that people have talked about, but I haven't paid close attention to the book section particularly.
Well, I mean, I'm suggesting that in order to sort of add support to your claim that our generation is changing things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, that you're part of a wave that may not yet be a big wave, but it's a highly visible one
mm-hmm.
to anybody who cares. And I think unlike, say, 10 years ago, where someone like you would just about have no place to go, you've got a place to go now, and one of them being I Believe in Love, something that you and Helen Alvarez have brought into being.
Right.
Do you have any plans to include more video on your site?
We would like to. I mean, we're a very, very small team, and we're actually
yeah.
in the middle of a fundraising push. We have an organization that's giving us a matching grant to
Good.
Help us grow I Believe in Love. So
good for you.
Yeah, every dollar's doubled.
How would anybody help you if they were inspired to donate to the cause?
Thank you for asking. On I Believe in Love, there is a tab that says Donate. And when you click on that tab, it gives you all the information for the matching grant, including.
And so that would help you reach that matching grant.
That would help us reach that matching grant.
For listeners who don't know, matching grants are a certain amount of money, like $100,000, and a donor will say, "If you can raise $100,000, I'll give you this $100,000." But you have to raise $100,000 to get it.
Right.
Which is, I think, a pretty good way to give large gifts, because you're saying to the organization, I'll give you a large gift, but I don't want you depending on me alone to provide, you know, all your money.
Right. Exactly. Right. So what we're trying to surface here too are, you know, our matching grants for $10,000, and we're trying to surface any size donor. So we've had people give $10, which is great because that becomes $20.
Absolutely.
So people give, you know, $1,000, you know, a couple hundred dollars. So
so matching this person is matching each donation.
Every gift will be doubled.
That's wonderful. So you don't have to get to $10,000 to get the money. You're getting the money as you go up the scale.
Right. But we would really obviously love to get to $10,000 because it would be hugely helpful and would give us more ability to do things like video.
And let's give, we got 1 minute left. Let's give everybody that URL again where they can find the wonderful stories, but also the donate button.
Yes. So it's ibelieveinlove.com.
ibelieveinlove.com. That's www.ibelieveinlove.com. And I want to thank you, Meg McDonald, one of the young leaders in this whole cultural renewal area, this, you know, challenging of the culture of death. Thank you for being part of that, and thank you for being on Church and Culture today.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. It was great to talk with you, Dale.
And to all of you who are listening, please join us again on Church and Culture this time and this day next week.
If you have any comments or questions about Church and Culture, you can contact Deal Hudson at dhudson@avemariaradio.net.
This program is made possible in part by CatholicBusinessPages.com, dedicated to helping grow businesses for a strong community of faith and Christian values. CatholicBusinessPages.com is your online directory resource for connecting you with businesses that have taken a strong stand to support those values that impact our lives. If Christian principles make a difference in your life, then CatholicBusinessPages.com will link you to business professionals who care about the values of our nation. CatholicBusinessPages.com, a great place to get connected.
My journalistic integrity was questioned when I approached a story about 40 Days of Life and did not include what the accuser thought was a balanced view from the other side. The issue was that the other side didn't want to go on the record. See, there's a price to pay for speaking truth. But what is truth? The Bible teaches us that murder is wrong. The unborn is a person. Just read the Gospel of Luke. For behold, when the sound of your greeting reached my ears, the baby leaped in my womb for joy. And in Jeremiah, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. And before you were born, I consecrated you. I've appointed you a prophet to the nations. Therefore, we know it is wrong to murder the unborn. Yet, I'm still attacked for standing by the Word of God. So what would Jesus say today when the majority do not agree with me for defending Scripture? He would say, speak truth anyway. This has been a Christ-centered communication message. I'm Vanessa Donhagarmo, a communication evangelist.
This is Lavinia Spirito for Catholic Way Bible Study. In Acts chapter 8, a pagan sorcerer named Simon Magus is so impressed and astonished by the signs and miracles wrought by the disciples that he offers them money in exchange for this Holy Spirit that moves them. When was the last time someone was astounded by the power of the Holy Spirit manifest in you? Yet this is the norm for all Christians. Through baptism and confirmation, we receive the Holy Spirit, who then equips us for mission with ordinary and extraordinary graces and gifts necessary for the building of the kingdom. These graces and gifts will be dormant in our lives unless we call upon the Holy Spirit to animate them. Invite the Holy Spirit into your life today and believe that He will work powerfully in and through you. Come, Holy Spirit, enkindle the hearts of your faithful. Send forth your Spirit, and they shall be created, and you shall renew the face of the earth.
Catholic Way Bible Study. Peace, power, purpose. Find out more at cwbs.org.
Hi, I'm Peggy Stanton, and I'm inviting you to join me on Power from the Pews. When I interview the people who are engaged in remarkable ministries that are making a real difference in their parishes and the world. That's this Saturday at 11 a.m. and Sunday at 9:30 a.m. on Ave Maria Radio.
Archbishop Alan Vigneron was one of the speakers at a 40 Days for Life kickoff, the National Shrine of the Little Flower.
Prayer and fasting, 40 Days for Life. The aim of these exercises, these acts, is to be energized, to be filled with the resources we need in order to play our role in this great act of deliverance, because God is working to deliver.